Well, good evening. And my name is Karen Mastriani, and I'll be facilitating the session tonight on Buddhism in a Nutshell. We actually have 5 sessions. It's great if you can come to all 5. I know life happens, and sometimes you miss. We do record any that you miss, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, how you can get those. But certainly coming is very beneficial. I promise I don't bite, not usually. You know, it can be more comfortable sitting up front for me, probably not for you, so I totally get it. But I encourage you to be brave tonight and try the cushions, get up and sit in a chair, try the cushions again. So feel free to play, and this is a good opportunity to do that. Very safe. This is a nice small group. We can make it very informal this evening. So, hello. Oh, brave soul. Good. And then if you don't like, so here's what I do. This is, well, I don't know when I sat on the cushion when I first started coming. It took me a little while. And then you play with it. Like you want to, we'll talk about it, but you know, you just want to be comfortable and switch your legs around and get up and sit in a chair when it gets too uncomfortable. So play. Nothing magic about sitting on cushions though, certainly. So I was listening as people came in. How many are here for the first time? It seemed like a lot. So not everybody, but quite a few. So did anybody go to Venerable Rabino's teaching? Nobody. Okay. I shouldn't say good because she was here for 2 weeks and it was just, it was an incredible teaching for the whole 2 weeks, but very hard act to follow. So I'll go ahead and say good. I told her if anybody had any questions from anything she said, I was going to be texting her while we were in this class together. So let's just quickly go around the room and introduce ourselves. And if you'll just say your name, where you're living now, maybe where you moved from or how long you've been in this area, and just what brought you here this evening? You know, were you reading about Buddhism? I mean, just what, you know, have you been studying for a while on your own, or you just were curious or interested, or a friend dragged you, or whatever reason that brought you here, if you'll just say that. And unfortunately, since I have to talk into the microphone, everybody has to talk into the microphone. So the microphone will become our friend, but we stream, and so there are people that are watching as we're streaming, and then the main thing is that we record this, and then folks can pull up the recordings to listen to them. And if we don't use the mic, it's just like this dead silence and then talking. And so the people listening to the recording really miss out on a lot. So asking questions, making a comment, I'll try to remind you to be very good about grabbing the mic and talking into it. And for some things, it'll just become cumbersome and I'll just repeat what somebody says so we're not constantly trying to run around with the microphone. So I put you on the spot, but if you'll just, everybody just introduce themselves, first, last name, where you're from, what brought you here this evening. It should be on. Try it.
Test. Okay.
And you have to hold it real close, that microphone, for some reason.
I'm Tanya Jordan, and I am from, well, not really from Raleigh, from Boise, Idaho, actually. But I've been here for about 14 years.
Oh.
I am here because I've just kind of been floating, spiritually, sort of. So I'm kind of on a journey, and I'm the worst. I have no discipline. I'm much better in a classroom setting. So, I mean, I do great in an education setting. So that's why I'm here, because I want to learn and be on a learning journey. So
very good. Welcome. Glad to be part of the journey.
Hello, my name is Lisa, and I'm from North Carolina, was born and raised in Winston-Salem, and moved away from North Carolina for many years and have come back to North Carolina, so I live here in Raleigh. I was born and raised Christian, but moved away from organized religion many, many years ago and started practicing meditation and took like Reiki classes and Course in Miracles and tried to practice the secret. And then the more I read about meditation, the more I read about Buddhism. And then I thought this would be really great. This would be great for me to experience and participate and to learn.
Okay, great. Welcome. Our train is our practice for this evening. It'll interrupt us several times, probably right when we're meditating.
My name's Marisol Patino. I've been in North Carolina for a long time, but I'm originally from Colombia, South America. I'm here because I originally attended the meditation class, and I've always been drawn to Eastern culture and art. But when I went to the meditation class, it was really inspiring, and I wanted to come learn more about Buddhism. So,
hello.
Hi, I'm Michelle Thompson. I'm actually from Charlotte, moved to Raleigh, but only about a year ago. I am here because I've done a lot of reading on Buddhism on my own, but I kind of have hit this. You can only learn so much on your own. So I've come here to see if I can take that step further.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Lauren Brown. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, been down here for about 6 years now. My New Year's resolution was to explore my religion this year. So right now I'm learning about Buddhism with this class and Christianity. I heard the Dalai Lama talk in person a couple of times, and I feel very overwhelmed by his love and empathy and compassion. So I kind of wanted to start with Buddhism.
Okay, great.
Hi, my name is Sam Roberti. I'm from New Jersey originally. I moved down here from China. I've been down here since last February. I'm here more curious about Buddhism as a worldview. Just want to understand different worldviews and how people see the world, and I think I find it interesting. So.
Okay, great.
Hi, my name is Eric Hebert. I am from Louisiana, and kind of like some people who went ahead of me here, I was raised Christian, moved away from organized religion also years ago, and I guess I would say I've been kind of floundering spiritually, kind of searching for, I guess, my own truth. But I started exploring meditation, and then I liked the Buddhist philosophy of integrating that meditative practice with spirituality, I guess. And so,
okay,
I just want to learn more about it.
My name is Mike Dodson. I'm originally from California, the Bay Area. I've been in and out of North Carolina for the past several years due to my job. But I just came here because my friend, Emily, she drugged me here. And I just thought it'd be interesting. It's not something I know a ton about, so I just thought I would learn some new perspectives and different ways of looking at the world.
My name's Emily, and I'm the friend. I am originally from Richmond, Virginia, and moved to North Carolina in 2001, have been in Raleigh since 2007, and kind of the same as everybody else, raised in Christianity, or turned away from organized religion, also heard the Dalai Lama speak a couple times, found him just incredibly inspirational, and am interested in learning more about Buddhism, and happened to just look up this place today and found out about this.
Wow.
Place. So pretty excited to be here. So,
and had time to drag a friend. It's impressive.
My name is Brandon Clancy. I'm from this area. I was born in Raleigh. My tattoo artist recommended I come here.
Ah.
He comes here. I've done a lot of reading on my own and hit a wall, so here I am to learn more.
Okay. Yep, you can pass it whichever way, and then we'll go around.
My name is Bonnie Button, and this is my daughter, Autumn, and I dragged her here. but she's been enjoying it. We've been coming for the past two Sundays.
Okay.
Anyway, we're just wanting to learn a little more about Buddhism.
Okay.
I'm Laura. I grew up here in Raleigh, just a couple miles away from here, and still live close by. And my husband, Dan, and I have been coming off and on for maybe the last year.
Okay.
We took another class. It was on Monday nights as
well.
The
Discovering Buddhism.
Yeah. But
a piece of that?
I kind of felt like that was a little more advanced than this was the better place to start. So
okay.
We come when we can. And so we're just happy to be here tonight.
Hi, I'm Danish. Been living in this area for about 18 years, originally from Bombay. I grew up with mixed religions. Mom was a different religion from dad. And somehow religion just turned me off, you know. I just felt, to me, it's more like a different form of politics. So I've been spiritual all my life. I've been following probably the Buddhist way of life, if not the teachings, ever since. I keep coming back to the formal setting, and then life gets in the way. I drop out, and I'm back here today.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Kyle Huber. I've been in Raleigh for about 16 years, and I grew up in organized Christian religion, and like some others, I fell away from it kind of as I got a little older. And I'm interested in the Eastern religions, and I've always been curious, so that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Maya McKean-Peraza. I grew up in Chapel Hill without any type of religion or spirituality, although I did go to a Quaker high school, which I loved.
What kind of high school? I missed it.
Quaker.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And so I just wanted to explore Buddhism, and I've learned a tiny bit on my own, but not very much. And I'm especially interested in the aspect of mindfulness. So.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sean Craig. I've lived in Raleigh for 17 years.
Hi.
Hey. And I'm moved here from Seattle. And when I was living in Seattle, I was involved in meditation groups.
Okay.
And once I moved here, I just sort of got busy with life. And now I have time. So I dragged my son with me tonight. This is Nikhil. So... glad to be here.
Yeah, my name's Nikhil, but I go by Nick. I'm here tonight because my mother thought it would be a good idea to bring me.
And you listened.
Yes. Okay.
Hi, I'm Leslie Cardin. This is my goddaughter, Jaslyn, who I also drug with me just to get to see what's going on here. I'm from San Diego, but I've lived here for, I don't know, 10, 12, something like that, years. I started practicing mindfulness on my own to help with stress and that feeling of overstimulation and chaos. And once I started learning about Buddhism, I saw that the stuff that I'd been learning during my mindfulness sessions kind of matched what Buddhism was talking about. So for me, this feels cool.
Okay.
And that's why I'm here.
My name's Carter Corker. I've been here in Raleigh for about 15 years and came with Leslie to hear Venerable Rabina.
Oh, okay.
And really enjoyed it. So I just was curious about more. Just came to find out more.
My name is Sarah Danovich. I'm actually here with two other people, and they're coming.
Okay.
I've actually done this class one other time. I'm here for my brother, my husband as well. I am trained in Reiki and energy work, but I find that Buddhism is a great tool for mindfulness, discipline. So that's really more where my interest is. But my husband is more looking forward to becoming a member here.
Okay.
I'm hoping to introduce Buddhism to my brother. And here they are.
Ah, very good. They made it.
Hi, I'm Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I assume, are we introducing ourselves?
Yes, we are. And why you're here? Or at,
We're here just to retake the class. We've been here a couple times, but
okay.
It's always good to just redo it.
All right. All right. You can pass it up. Kids right over here. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Just here to experience something new, I guess.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Nakoa Dunn, and I'm here because of you and Dave.
I wondered what you were doing here.
Oh, yeah, right? So I came that one time with you guys and had such a nice experience, but at that point in my life, I felt really overwhelmed because I didn't understand the practice. I didn't know what people were doing. I felt nervous, and I didn't come back. And I recognize all of the concepts as being a part of the way I like to live. And I thought, you know, I feel a little bit better if I got educated before I came back.
Okay.
But I'm really glad to see. I saw your name in someone else's post on Facebook about tonight's event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's
interesting.
Out, so.
Well, good.
Yeah, I'm glad I made it.
Well, there's two people I know in this class. So.
My name is Rich Lowe. I'm from Seven Pines, originally from Illinois. Been here a couple of years. So I've been doing some reading on Eastern philosophy, Buddhism, and saw this online and thought I'd take the next step. So
okay.
Glad to be here.
My name is Bruce Campbell. I live here in Raleigh for the past few years. I guess I'm mainly here because of curiosity.
Danielle, the same. I'm an introvert, so this is probably all you're going to get. Well,
we'll see.
Born and raised here. That's it.
All right. Very good.
My name is Michelle, and I've been going to another Buddhist center and this Buddhist center for several years.
Okay.
I think actually seven. And I realize I don't really understand a lot about Buddhism. I mean, I know how to meditate and have a practice that I've really started working on last year, very consistently, finally. But I was actually driving here in the horrible traffic, and I was thinking, what are the Four Noble Truths? Wow, Michelle, you should really know that, because I was talking to someone about Buddhism today, and I was like, how would I explain it to them? And anyways, so I don't have a lot of the knowledge and the language about it. I have not had a very structured education, and it's kind of been all piecemeal here and there, and it's been really hard to find any particular source or book or whatever that can actually clearly state everything in kind of a concise and, you know, step-by-step sort of manner. So that I'm coming in.
All right. Good. So if you'll shut that off, and then whoever, just be the keeper of the microphone for now, because we will pass it around as people ask questions or anything comes up. So I will take care of some housekeeping, and one is to put your phones on silence or vibrate, or like we say in here, meditate. So I wanted to make sure I did that. I think that Sandy let everybody know where the restrooms are, but just in case, they're just right outside the Gampa to the left, the men's room and the women's room. We have tea and coffee that are out there. And then all of you probably have already found our website, but I do have the website, you know, the login up there. And Buddhism in a Nutshell is under our spiritual program, or you can just go to the Buddhism in a Nutshell URL, which is just .org/Buddhism-Nutshell. Because there are handouts there, and I forget, there's like four or five handouts. One of them is the introduction that I have back there. And if you didn't pick up one, that's fine. Just pick up one when you leave. But it is online on the website. We're going to do a couple of meditations, and both of those are on the website. And then we're going to talk about the posture that we use here at the center. And so that outlines all on there, as well as a reference list. And I'll talk about some other books as well, because I think that guides or books can be very helpful, and some of you may have some that you feel are even more helpful than what I'm going to suggest. I also put my Gmail address up there, which is just my last name dot first name, so mastriani.karen@gmail.com. Don't hesitate to email me with questions or, you know, a resource request, or you didn't understand something I said because I talked too fast or it wasn't clear. I don't mind at all. So email me as much and as often as you'd like. That's fine. And then I put up here kind of the agenda that we're going to go through for this evening. And one is going to be just an introduction to this course and what this is all about and to our center here. And then we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Buddha's life, Shakyamuni Buddha's life, as well as we're going to introduce the Four Noble Truths. And we're just going to introduce it tonight, and then we'll talk in more detail next week at our next class. So I've been coming to the center for, I don't know how long, 11 or 12 years now, I think, close to that. And I also was raised Catholic, so came from the Catholic background, had left organized religion and searched, like many of you, trying to find a spiritual path, and found it. Just because you're here, this doesn't necessarily mean it's your path, and that's not our intentions at all. This is just to give you, you know, you're curious and you want information, and this is just to give you general information, and we are going to glaze topics, because they can get pretty deep and lengthy. So we'll go over some of the topics, and you just think about what you find helpful and beneficial and interesting, and look at them from all angles and test them out. What is uncomfortable to you, put it on a shelf. If you decide you're interested in this path and you want to explore it further, pull them back off the shelf periodically and look at them. When we started coming here, we were then in the basement, and it was like you had to walk down almost like this little alleyway, and it was dark and rainy, and I thought, there's no way I'm walking down that alleyway. It wasn't even an alleyway. I don't even know what made me think that now. But so, you know, it's scary when you first walk in here, and you're uncomfortable, and nobody explains the rules. You're like thrown in the middle. Our first time was a Discovering Buddhism class, and I walked in there, and I said, oh, I've been dropped in the middle. I don't have a clue what anybody's saying. So I left and started from what I thought was the beginning, but you kind of always feel like you're dropped in the middle because we're forcing a linear process on something that's really not linear. You know, it's kind of circular. You can jump in anywhere, and then, you know, you can find your way from any of that. So we'll talk about that a little bit this evening as well. And the whole idea is that we can become more and more comfortable with some of these things in Buddhism that can be beneficial. And we have people that come here from all faiths. So we have Christians, Catholics, we have a lot of Jewish traditions that come here, and they maintain that religious, you know, foundation and just add what they like from the Buddhist principles. So that's fine as well. So for those of you who just walked in, welcome. I encourage you to sit up front. I can't tell you how intimidating it is to look out and see everybody in the back, so I'm glad it's filling in. But what I do encourage you to do is try the cushions. You know, sit on a cushion, sit on two. This is your time to just kind of play when it's nice and safe and you don't feel so intimidated by everything. So, whatever we're going to say or talk about, and let me just say that I'm one of the facilitators of this class. You all met Sandy, and she facilitates Buddhism in a nutshell. I'm actually going to be out of town for one of the sessions, and so Sandy will lead that session when I'm gone. There's about five of us. And, you know, we all have a little bit of a different style, but we all follow the same outline. And that's just real important, because you don't want to hear Buddhism according to Karen. You know, you really want to know what the foundation of this tradition is. And I'm by no means an expert. Even after, you know, 10 plus years, I feel like I'm still just scratching the surface. And that's the beauty of this, is the more you study, the kind of the deeper you want to go. And so there's always lots to learn. But you don't take anything that any of us says. Even the Buddha said, don't take my teachings at face value. Question me. Look at it from all sides. Test it. You want to test this like you would test, you know, a block of gold or a diamond. Is it real? You want to research it. You want to, you know, tap at it and have an expert study it. And then practice it. You know, is it working for you? Is it helpful? If it is, then keep doing it. And if it's not, stop and try a different approach and see if that works. So the whole idea is to find what's comfortable for us and makes us have a more peaceful, calm mind and be just better, happier beings. And that's really the whole goal of Buddhism. And I'll say that several times this evening. Don't hesitate to interrupt and ask me a question. Unfortunately, you're going to have to be friends with Mr. Mike, and just so that other people can hear what your questions are. And so we'll pass the mic around. So the other thing that we do in this tradition is we set our intentions. And so before we go much further this evening, I want you just to sit comfortably and just close your eyes for a second and just take a few breaths and just become present to this room. And I want you to think about your intention or your motivation for being here this evening. You know, when you think about the rain and the traffic out there and it's cold, you could have stayed home in the comfort of your house, warm and cozy, but you ventured here either because you were strong-armed into coming or curious, or wanted to learn more, testing out lots of religions, and this is one of them. But for whatever reason, you found this. And just think for a second and honor that intention. And it's all good. And then regardless of whether your arm was twisted to come here, or you're just curious, can you stretch your intention to be, to find a little bit more of a peaceful mind, a sense of calm and well-being for yourself? And then a more altruistic reason of the ripple effect. Your well-being will impact the well-being of others around you. And can you make that your motivation and wish, that you can help other people find a more peaceful, happy life? And so before you do a meditation or take a class, setting your intention to do so or your motivation is just actually one of the most important things you can do. And I got to tell you, I started with that practice. I thought, okay, well, I can set my intentions to try not to lie today or exaggerate, because is exaggeration a lie? Or say anything harmful with my speech. And just setting that intention just kind of flips your mind. And so we do it now with our work. You know, we do a lot of health and safety consulting and leadership development. And before we do that, I just think, how am I making the workplace a better place? How am I benefiting people? And can I be of benefit? And it just flips what you're doing. When I'm cleaning my house, I set the intentions. Okay, I want a clean house. So I'm not going to begrudge the fact that I have to clean. I'm going to clean it, and I'm going to enjoy cleaning it. And as I'm cleaning my home, I'm going to clean the cobwebs and all the negativity out of my mind. So you can really set your intentions in everything you do, not just when you're sitting here taking a class or on the cushion. So it can be a very valuable practice. And then you always dedicate at the end of what you do. And we'll talk about dedication again at the end, because that's very important. So in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, we have a 7-point meditation posture that I will go through this evening, and then we'll kind of quickly go through it as a reminder, like the next few times we do a meditation, so that you can kind of get into that practice. And then these 7 points are one of the handouts that are online at the website. So you can go there, and it's just really a nice little summary of what we're going to go through together. Some of you may have heard these 7 points before, but we're going to start with our legs. And if you're sitting in a chair, you want the soles of your feet to be flat on the floor. So if you can't comfortably have your feet on the floor, then grab a pillow, either off the cushion or under one of those chairs. They'll hand them to you, and just rest your feet on a cushion. And you don't want to sit leaning back against the chair. You just kind of want to sit a little forward, a little more straight, and I'll remind you of that. And this is actually a good time is, you know, try sitting on a cushion. Or actually, if you want to sit in a chair this time and sit on a cushion next time, that's fine. So if you're on a cushion, I wish I could demonstrate a full lotus position, but I cannot. I don't know if anybody can, but a full lotus or Vajra position is considered to be a stable position that keeps your back nice and straight. But you have to be incredibly flexible to be able to do that. And the full Vajra position is your feet on your opposite thighs with both soles of your feet kind of facing you. You can do it?
Yes.
Ah, so what, we might have a demo. For the rest of us, a half Vajra is fine, where you just have, you know, one leg, one foot on one thigh, and the soles of your feet facing you. Or you can just sit cross-legged. Doesn't matter. Some people will actually sit with one foot behind the other. And for some of us, there's nothing magical, one, about sitting on a cushion, although I will tell you some of my feelings about that, or, you know, sitting in a chair. Just either one that's comfortable for you, that's fine. I do think it's important that we sit, even just for a few minutes, once or twice a day. That's important. So the key is you want to be comfortable. So your arms in this tradition, and there are lots of different meditation postures, but this is the Tibetan Buddhist meditation posture, is your right palm resting in your right hand resting in your left palm, I should say, with your thumbs lightly touching, like forming a flame, and you want them just below your navel or your belly button. They should be relaxed, your shoulders and your arms relaxed, but you want your elbows out away from your body just a little bit. So the idea is your circulation, so that air can kind of move through and around you, and it helps to keep us alert instead of getting too drowsy. There's enough obstacles to meditation, so if we can get rid of some of them, it's helpful. So legs, arms with your hands nice and relaxed, and then elbows out a little bit. So the next body posture is our backs, and you want your back to be, you know, relax, not stiff, but you want straight. And so you don't want to be laying back or slouched over or too straight. But if you think about your back as a stack of blocks or coins that are just kind of lined up to keep us nice and straight and tall, is a good way to think of it. And it's good if your hips and your buttocks are up a little higher than your knees. It can help keep your back straight, and it's really a comfortable position. So sometimes people will put two cushions under them or fluff up the cushion under them so that your bottom's a little up. So play with that as you're here this evening. And then from our back, we go to our eyes, and you want your eyes to be either slightly opened or slightly closed, however you want to look at it. You want to let a little bit of light through with your gaze kind of going downwards. You're not looking at anything in particular, just a downward gaze, either, you know, at your nose or just past your nose. If your eyes are open, especially when you first start meditating, it can be very distracting. And if your eyes are closed, it can make you real drowsy. And you'll start daydreaming, and that's distracting, especially, you know, as we keep meditating. But when you first start out, if it's difficult to hold your eyes where a little bit of light comes in, close them. That's the best thing to do, is just close them for now. And then just keep practicing letting a little light in. Our jaw and our mouth should be nice and relaxed. You want your lips touching, your teeth slightly apart so that you're not clenching your teeth. Just a relaxed position of your jaw and mouth. And then the tongue is next, and you want your tongue to be touching the roof of your mouth, just lightly touching behind your upper teeth with your tongue. And then the last is our head. And your head should be your chin just slightly downward. You don't want it too far down. Again, you'll get drowsy, and too high can be kind of distracting. And the way they teach it is that if you think about your back as that stack of coins or blocks, and if there was a string coming from the crown of your head just pulling up lightly so that your chin is a little down, your back's nice and straight, and it's just kind of pulling you up to be straight. So make sense? So we have our legs, our arms, our back, our mouth and our jaw, our tongue, our eyes, and our head. So in this position, let's just do a quick breathing meditation. So this is a concentration or focus meditation, and the object of our meditation is our breath. And so we're going to watch our breath for 2 minutes. I'll gong the bell, and we'll start the 2 minutes. And what I want you to do is, after I hit the bell, is I want you to just think that the only thing that matters is your breath and watching your breath. And the practice is, our minds are going to wander. That's what our minds do, that constant little chatter, that little monkey brain there, just constantly going, and we're going to bring it back to the breath. So every time a thought comes through or our mind wanders, we're going to come back to the breath. And you can either watch the breath at the tip of your nose, feeling the air going in and out, like is it cool going in and tickle, is it warm coming out, just watch it enter at your nose. Or if it's more comfortable for you, you can watch your belly rise and fall, just like the ocean, the waves of an ocean. You don't follow your breath, so kind of pick one or the other, at your nose or your stomach, rising and falling. And if it's helpful, count, and it can be helpful. So inhaling and exhaling is one. And then if your mind wanders or you lose count, go back to one. This isn't a race for who can count the most numbers. It's just really training our minds to come back to the object we want it to focus on. And so always bring your mind back to your breath.
Or
So before we stop, we're going to set our intentions for this class, for our own well-being and the well-being and happiness of others. And we're going to think that it's up to us to ensure the happiness of all sentient beings. It's our responsibility. So I encourage you, your only homework is going to be to just try that. If you can sit on the cushion, great, 2 minutes. 2 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes in the evening if you can. If you can stretch it out to 5, great. But 2 minutes can make a tremendous difference. And even if the only time you have is when you're standing in the shower, then do your 2 minutes then, you know, whatever you can do, just to try to set your mind and bring your mind back to the object of your focus. And your breath is just a nice, easy, good way to start. How was that? Okay. Any problems? Okay. All right. And we'll do another one later, and we'll practice different meditations, and maybe we'll make them longer as the weeks progress. So let me tell you, I'll tell you a little bit about the Kadampa Center and our history. And some of you were reading in our newcomer's book, and there's also the handout that I printed off. It has a really nice summary of our center, but it was founded in 1991 by Don Brown, who's still an active member and one of our teachers here. And Don is a physician in Cary, and it was just a group of a handful of people who were meeting in each other's homes. And then they rented the basement where we were for several years until we moved here, I think it was in 2007. So from that start in 1991, we now have a geshe. And some of you have been coming on Sundays or have been coming for a while, so you have met Geshe-la, and his name is Gelug Sherpa, and a geshe is an honorary title. It's like having a PhD in Buddhism, and he has the highest geshe, which is a Larampa geshe. So we are so blessed and fortunate to have him here since 1998. This center is part of the FPMT, the Federation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, and it was founded in 1975 by Geshe Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe. And their pictures are up here behind me. So Lama Yeshe is the picture to the right of His Holiness, and Lama Zopa is to the left. Those are much younger pictures. Lama Yeshe died of cancer in the 1980s. And Lama Zopa remains our spiritual director of FPMT as well as our center here. And he'll be coming in May. He comes here almost every year. He hasn't been here for 3 years now. He had a stroke 3 years ago. And so we are excitedly looking forward to him being here in May. And he'll be doing a two-week retreat in Black Mountain for any of you who are interested in that retreat. But he will do a teaching here at the center. And so that would, it's just kind of lovely to hear him teach. Actually, it was Lama Zopa that asked Geshe-la to come here, and when Geshe-la was asked, without knowing any English or not ever having left Sarah J. Monastery since he was 7, gladly came to benefit all of us. And he speaks English just eloquently now, and he understands our little idiosyncrasies, and, you know, so it's just fun that he gets the culture and to have him here around us, so that's pretty special. We follow, of course, His Holiness the Dalai Lama as our, you know, the spiritual guide. And even though he's no longer the political leader of Tibet, he is still the recognized spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism. In addition to Geshe-la being here, we have several nuns who have ordained since being members here, and we have lay teachers. I'm not one of them, but we have expert lay teachers here. Our director of the center is Robbie Watkins, and he actively teaches here. He's a physician in Cary. He and Don Brown they have a practice together. They're partners. And Don still teaches, and Stephanie Smith is one of our teachers. We have so many great lay teachers in addition to having our Geshe-la. So there's lots of ways that you can ask questions, talk to people. I am by far not an expert, but I have my pen and paper here. And if I can't answer your questions or I'm not comfortable answering your questions, I will find the answer for you, I promise you. So don't hesitate to ask, and I'll get you more information. And when we use the term Geshe-la, la is a term of respect. And so with our teachers, that's just kind of an honorary title that we give them, Geshe-la. Any questions or anything else you want to know about our center, or anything you read in those booklets? I should have reread those pamphlets before I sat here. Yes. We'll start back there since the microphone's close back there, and then we'll pass it up this way.
So several people have said that they come on Sundays, or you've been saying that they come on Sundays. What
Thank
happens
you.
On Sundays?
Oh,
that they come
it's a
to?
Secret. No. Thank you, because I meant to explain some of that. So, thank you. So this is the Buddhism in a nutshell. Kind of gives you that we're glazing topic. So it's a nice way to get introduced. But you can come to any of the teachings at the center, and they're all free. All we ask is you donate what you can from your heart, and we'll talk about that later. It's called Dana. And we're one of the only centers that still has that practice, so it's just incredible. But what it does is it allows us to practice generosity so that we can give from our heart in a generous way that we feel comfortable without feeling like we have to. So on Sundays, there's two teachings, and the teachings are usually done by Geshe-la at 9 or 10:45, and they're different topics on how to have a happier life. And the Geshe-la will go through different meditation techniques with us or teachings, and so you just come in and you sit just like you are. And Geshe-la, that throne is usually over here where this chair is, so the throne is behind us, and Geshe-la sits up on that chair. And then we say prayers, and we do chants. And you got to remember that all the prayers and the chants and all the pictures and the decorations, they're all to help our mind. And that's the whole purpose of all of this. So if the prayers aren't comfortable and the chants aren't comfortable, you don't do them. But they truly are just, the prayers are just lovely, and they're just to benefit all beings. And the chants are, again, to either take action in terms of how do we want to live a better life, or to have compassion, and how do we have compassion, or to honor the Buddha. So there's a purpose to all the chants that are even done here. So you'll hear some of that on Sunday mornings as well. And they're led by one of our nuns, Lamala, who sits up here also. For those of you who have younger children up through high school, we have an incredible family, in children's program here. So at 10:45, the second session on Sundays is the family teaching or session, and the kids are in here, and then they leave, and they break out into different age groups, and they learn things like patience and respect and kindness and generosity. They'll learn who Buddha is, but it's mostly the principles that we all want to kind of live by. On Wednesday evenings, Geshe-la has another class called Wednesday Basic Program, and even though it's called Basic, it's really intended as if you've taken the 2-year Discovering Buddhism class and you want to learn more about Buddhism, you come on Wednesdays. But he's been teaching the Lam Rim, which I'll talk about again here in a few minutes, and anybody can benefit, beginner, it doesn't matter. I think the key is come to what feels comfortable, because you'll always feel like you're thrown into the middle, and then you'll get real used to that eventually. And you just come and you listen to what you can. And the good thing is things get repeated over and over again. And then so eventually you're ready to hear it. And it's like, you just kind of get it. So the more you hear things, even though at first you sit here and you think, what are these people talking about? Then you hear it again. You think, oh, yeah. You know, it just kind of slowly comes in. So come to anything. Sundays, Wednesday nights, Monday nights are usually the Discovering Buddhism class. And they're 4 to 6 week sessions on one topic. So karma, we're going to talk about for whatever, 20 or 30 minutes. And you'll study karma for 4 to 6 weeks. And you're going to leave there feeling like, oh, my gosh, we just scratched the surface of karma. So you'll just always realize there's always more to learn, always more to learn. And then this class usually alternates with Meditation 101, which you mentioned. And Meditation 101 is just another great class to take. That's a 4 to 5 week class. You practice all kinds of different types of meditation. Answer your question? Okay. All right. Pass it on up here. That's fine. I should have asked if you still had a question.
Yeah. I was just curious. Yeah, I was curious about the Dalai Lama. You said he's no longer in political power. I was wondering if that has anything to do with Chinese government or what the story is.
Okay, good question. I probably don't know enough to answer this intelligently, but His Holiness was the political leader of China. And even when he was in exile, he remained the political leader of China. So he exiled from Tibet in 1959, March 10th, my birthday. And they set up, you know, the government in India allowed them to set up a refugee camp, and they have a wonderful school there. And he remained the political leader until, I don't know when, relatively recently. And he decided that it would be in the best interest, because of the unrest with China, it would be in the best interest that he give that power to somebody who was there in Tibet, and that he wouldn't cause, you know, so much turmoil, even though that turmoil continues. So that is why he stepped down. That's correct. No. So that's a good question. So the political leader of Tibet now is not considered the Dalai Lama. He is still the Dalai Lama. He's the 14th Dalai Lama. And they are reincarnated in this tradition, which we'll talk about. So there's a lovely book and story out there called Kundu. And it's his life from when he was 2. And it's just a wonderful movie. You can probably get it on Netflix. But how they realized he was the Dalai Lama, the 14th reincarnate, and that whole process of coming today. So he's still the Dalai Lama. He says he may not come back. So this might be the last Dalai Lama, because the Chinese government is going to select the next Dalai Lama. So, anybody else? Okay. We'll have chances to ask questions again later. Oh, my. Okay. So, we're going to talk a little bit about The third item on the agenda is a little bit about Shakyamuni's life as and when he became a Buddha and how that transpired. And some of you may have read the story of Siddhartha or some other stories about the Buddha's life. And so for some of you, this may just be a quick review. And I won't go into a lot of details about it, but he was a man. He was just a person just like the rest of us who, through his studies and meditations, it became a realized being. And, you know, he struggled with the same questions that y'all came in here with is, you know, I'm searching. I left organized religion, but I feel like there's something and I want to look what's out there. And you're curious because what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose for being here? Who am I? How did this all transpire? And those truly were the same questions that Buddha had when he was a man. And then he set upon the journey. So he was born in India into a royal family. And so he was known as Prince Siddhartha, Gautama Siddhartha. Everybody called him Prince Siddhartha. And his mother died when he was young, Queen Maya. And there are elaborate stories of his birth and his childhood that you can read about. You know, his mom had vivid dreams when she was pregnant, so she knew she was carrying a special child. He had a special birth and, you know, just excelled at everything he tried when he was a child. I think every religion has elaborate stories of what the birth was like and the childhood was like. And he lived just this incredibly rich life, but having everything he ever wanted and was completely protected and surrounded by love. And when he was young, a seer came and did whatever, was talking and, you know, did a little seance there to see what would Siddhartha be when he grew up. And he told his father that he'll be a great leader and he'll either be a king and take over your kingdom, or he'll really work towards the benefit of all beings to reduce suffering and improve lives. And his father wanted Siddhartha to follow in his footsteps. And so he really tried to protect him from ever wanting to leave the kingdom. And so Siddhartha never saw suffering, never saw aging. He never even saw a flower die. Everything was always replaced. Everything was always fresh and beautiful. But Siddhartha just wanted to explore. He actually was married. He got married when he was 16 and had a son. But when he was 28, 29 years old, he had those burning questions of what's outside these walls. And so he left one day with a few attendants, and when he was outside seeing the other people in the kingdom, he came across a person who was very sick. He came across a corpse, somebody who had died. He came across an elderly person. He had never seen aging before. And then he came across a mandikat, an ascetic, a monk who was studying. And he found all of these things quite shocking. And his attendant had to explain to him what a corpse was, what aging was, what illness was. And then Siddhartha realized that this suffering existed and that it would happen to him and his family. He was quite shocked. They would grow old. They would get sick, they would die, which he had never thought about or even realized before. And so, but yet, here was this ascetic, and when he asked his attendant about him, you know, he was peaceful and calm. And so, you know, and the attendant said, he's been studying and he has this peaceful, calm mind. So when Siddhartha went back into the palace, now he had even more questions, and he really had this burning to, I've got to find some way to prevent this. I've got to help people and prevent the suffering that I see, especially among the people I love. So he left the palace to find a different way. And when he was out there, he tried different things, just like we all are. And he did different studies, and it was no different than what we're doing. He had different teachings, and none of them were kind of working. He continued his search, and he and five other ascetics decided to go with this very extreme self-deprecating study. So they decided if you have too much wealth, that didn't stop any suffering. So they were in complete denial. They didn't even eat except for like a nut a day or a leaf a day or a grain of rice a day was all they ate, trying to really, through this suffering, find out what is the meaning of life, trying to reach enlightenment. At the end of 6 years, Siddhartha was so ill that he almost drowned when he was taking a bath in this lake, and he realized that this was not working and that there had to be another way. And just as he was laying there, the story is that a boat came down the river and there was a man on the boat stringing a guitar. And as he was stringing the guitar, Siddhartha realized that for beautiful music to play, that the strings had to be perfectly tuned, that if they were too loose, they didn't work, or too tight, it didn't work. And that's when Siddhartha realized the middle way, that you can't have all the wealth and denial that he had and protection that he had in his palace, or all of the suffering and the denying of even nourishment. It would take the middle way to find enlightenment. So at that point, a woman came along, gave him this porridge to eat, and it gave him the sustenance. So he meditated for 49 days under the Bodhi tree, and in his meditation at the end of that 49 days, he had gotten rid of all the negativities and obscurations that he had in his mind. And it was really at that point that he became an enlightened being, a Buddha at that stage. And we'll talk in a minute about what that means to be enlightened, or what it means to be a Buddha. But after that 49 days, he was really trying to think about what do I do now and how do I teach this to others. So he spent some time thinking about that. And then when he was about 35 years old now at this point, he went to find the other five ascetics that he had started out with. And they were at a place called Deer Park in India. And he walked for days to get there to them. And he gave his first teaching, which were the Four Noble Truths, which we'll talk about here in a minute, and to these five ascetics. And when they first saw him coming, their reaction was just like ours would be. They felt like he was a traitor, that he left them, that he thought he was better than them, and he ate, and he really, you know, he gave up everything instead of following their way. But they could see there was something different about him. So they listened, and they became one of his, you know, first followers for his teachings. Any questions about Buddha's life or how he became a Buddha? He was a man, a human being, just like the rest of us. So he was not born a Buddha, he developed enlightenment, and then he spent the rest of his life until he was 80 when he died teaching so that we could all find, you know, using his middle way, we could all actually reach that state of Buddhahood that is the potential for all of us. Did you have a question, or are you just jumping off? Go ahead. Ah, good question. Yes, but not in the way we think of it. His son, the story goes, became one of his followers, and his wife that he did go back and take care of in some ways, and she did follow his teachings. Yes, but it wasn't in the traditional sense that we think. Ah, so all right, let's talk about that. So we can all. Yeah, that's what they tell us. So we can all become Buddha. We all have Buddha nature and Buddha potential. And when Buddha sat for 49 days, to become a Buddha, you have to get rid of all the obscurations and delusions in our minds and only cultivate positive states of mind. And we all have that potential if we follow certain teachings and practices. So Let me start out with what it means to be a Buddhist, and then we'll talk about, so then what is a Buddha, and what is that potential that we all have? So when you look at the definition of what it means to be a Buddha, there's just several points to, or what it means to be a Buddhist, there are several points to consider. And one is, it's not a religion, which many of you mentioned, you're really not even searching for a religion, but in the West, I mean, we've kind of, we do think of it as a religion, but it really is a psychology and a science. So Buddhism is more of that way of life, and that it's the psychology of the mind, and it really means becoming an inward being and looking inward at the mind for what are the causes of suffering. We all look out there, and that's real easy to do. We see suffering all the time, and people do mean things to us, and we look at that as it's because of them that, you know, they caused me suffering. They caused me to be unhappy. And Buddhism is saying, look inward for the causes of suffering and happiness, which we'll talk about again. So it's all about the potential of the mind. And that's why everything you see here is helping us to develop that potential of our own minds as we go inward. And it also means that we're following the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. And so Siddhartha, when he became a Buddha, he took the name Shakyamuni, which just means Shakya is the clan that he was born into in India, and Muni just means a great sage. And so that's where that term came from. And a Buddha is not a creator. There is no creator God in Buddhism, and we'll talk about that more again as we continue to explore Buddhism in this class. He just became a fully enlightened being and looked at the truth of how the world existed and how reality existed. So to be a Buddha just means to become fully enlightened, or that fully aware being who removed all those negative qualities, all those non-virtuous states, delusions, and just develop more positive states of mind. So when you think about non-virtuous states of mind or negative states of mind, what qualities come to mind? Like when you think about a negative state of mind, what do you think about? And when you say it, I'll just say it in the microphone so the recording can hear it. What's a negative state of mind? Jealousy. Anger. Impatience. If I say it wrong, tell me, because I'm really losing my hearing. It's terrible. Old age and suffering. Hate. Resentment, resentful. Greed. Those are all pretty negative states of mind. So what are virtuous states of mind or positive states of mind? Compassion. Love. Generosity. Kindness. Anger towards bad things. Is that ever a positive state? We'll talk about that. That's kind of passion.
I hate child molestation.
We'll talk about that. So he said, I hate child molestation. We're not going to talk about child molestation necessarily. But we'll talk about bad things in the world and we're kind of karma and how that comes about. And because we don't like or support something doesn't mean that anger towards it. Believe me, I don't know how that happens, but we're all on this path and we'll all learn that and be able to view every sentient being with compassion, because we all want happiness and none of us want to suffer. And so those of you that were in Venerable Rabina's class, she said, let's take a survey in here. Who in here wants to be killed? Who in here wants somebody to come up and harm or punch you in the nose? Who in here wants somebody to say something harmful about your reputation or something mean and not like you? Nobody would raise their hand. I mean, it's 0% want any harm to us. And yet all of us would say we want to be happy, whether we were Hitler or, you know, Hitler had a mother. had a wonderful childhood, from what I understand. Every child molester had a mother at some point in time that they were born to, and somebody that cared and nurtured them so that they could live. And yet, how does that happen, that they could turn to do such bad behaviors? But if we're going to develop those positive states, then that means letting go of the anger and the resentment and the impatience and developing love and compassion and kindness, all the positive states. And Buddha says that it's those negative states of mind that actually cause us suffering, and it's those positive states of mind that lead us to happiness. And Nikoa is one of the experts on happiness and how do we become happier people. And so you practice, you don't have to be Buddhist to know this or to practice these kinds of principles. And that's what being a Buddhist and Buddhism is showing us. How do we let go of that suffering in our mind? First of all, to realize that suffering is in our mind, because we don't. And then how do we practice to become happier people? And so that's one of the whole goals of practicing. And that through practicing, developing these virtuous states, letting go of non-virtuous states, we can actually attain this full awakening and enlightenment so that we can become Buddhas. Some people in one lifetime, most of us, it will take eons of lifetimes of practicing and getting closer and closer. But if we keep practicing and we follow the Buddhist path in his teachings, then we can become enlightened. There is a stupa outside, and I don't know if it'll still be raining when we go out, but even if it is, I encourage you to walk around the stupa. There's merit in just walking around the stupa that we can gain, just in that simple act. And so Geshe-la says, just do it, whether you believe it or not. Just walk around that stupa, even just one time, and we can implant all these positive seeds in our mind stream. So important to do, good to do. So, Buddha's first teaching was at Deer Park, and the first teaching is called the first turning of the wheel of Dharma. And there were actually three turnings of the wheel. And this one, was the Four Noble Truths. And all Dharma means is that it's a guide or a way to protect us. So it's almost a protection from suffering. And there are thousands and thousands different ways that we suffer. And so there are lots of different types of dharmas or teaching or protection that we can use to protect our minds. And if something doesn't work for us or doesn't feel good, there's another one that can be beneficial and can be helpful to us. And that the whole idea is that we will totally destroy these obscurations, all these delusions in our minds. So, the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, and all the turning of the wheel means there's teachings. So there were these sets of teachings that he did. The second one was on the nature of reality, and then the third one was on how things exist and how they don't exist. And we'll explore those a little bit. And for tonight, I'm just going to introduce the Four Noble Truths, and then we'll talk about them in more detail next week. And these are really the foundation of Buddhist practices, are these Four Noble Truths. And if you think about them like going to a doctor for an illness, it's just a nice comparison that way. And they are in logical order. So the first noble truth is the truth of suffering, that there is suffering in the world. And the first step is to realize that, to admit that we are sick. So for some of us, like right now, my legs are suffering. maybe you have a headache. Maybe, you don't feel good. Some of you may feel great tonight. You're here with a special friend, person, family member. You have a great job. You got a nice car. You live in a great home. You're feeling good. The Buddha would say that's still kind of contaminated suffering. We're you know, that's still not true, that true happiness that we need to get to. So part of it is realizing what suffering is and what happiness is, and realize that, you know, the suffering exists out there. So admitting you're sick before you can actually go to the seek medical care, go to the doctor and seek care. So the second noble truth is that the truth of the causes of suffering, that there are causes of suffering, and just like to treat an illness, a doctor has to determine what's wrong with you and what's the best treatment there is. So we seek their advice. The third noble truth is the truth of the cessation of suffering, that once the doctor determines our illness, they'll let us know what the cure is and how we can treat ourselves and be cured. And the fourth noble truth is that there is a path to the cessation of suffering. So once we see the doctor, we know what our illness is, we know what we have to do to get well, we have to actually do it. So it's actually following the treatment. So that's what the four noble truths are. The truth of suffering, the truth of the causes of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path up to the cessation of suffering. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, these four truths are the foundation and the reason why you kind of go inner to begin to look at our minds, look at some of our negative states of mind, really think, are these negative states causing our suffering, such as anger, jealousy, impatience, resentment, that some of the states that you were talking about. Who suffers, us or the person we're angry towards? His Holiness has said, and the Buddha has said, being angry, it's like you take the poison and expect the other person to die. It's us that, you know, we're the ones that are poisoning ourselves with those negative states of mind. And think about when you feel good or positive. It's when you're practicing love, kindness, compassion. That's really what brings us happiness and the happiness for other people as well. And we will explore those, you know, the Four Noble Truths again next week. That's really kind of meaty, powerful stuff to think about. And what the path of the cessation of suffering, the Buddha laid out the Lam Rim, which was taught by Atisha in the 11th century. He brought Buddhism to Tibet, and we'll talk a little bit about the history of Buddhism next week. And he really began the teachings of the Long Rim based on the Buddhist principles. And then, you know, it has since been translated. We have books out there. There are actually three volumes of the Long Rim. I don't encourage you necessarily to start there when you're learning about Buddhism. We actually have a great book out there called Buddhism for Dummies that is excellent. It was written by a Buddhist scholar. It's wonderful. All those books are wonderful. The titles are a little off. This session used to be called Buddhism 101, and then evolved into Buddhism in a Nutshell. And it's really based on a book by Venerable Amy Miller, who has been here teaching, and we do have this book out there, and there's actually a CD in the back, so you can, or DVD, but it's an MP3 that you can actually listen to, that is this book on tape. And that can be a helpful book. I think any books that you buy out there by His Holiness, there's one called The Art of Happiness. It is probably one of my favorite books, yours too. But I have lots of favorite books, and those are just a few, and then there's a reference list out there. But the Lam Rim really sets out that clear path, and all of these books are ways to help us look at that path and find that path on how we get rid of suffering states of mind and develop positive, virtuous states of mind, and the Lam Rim can help us do that. So it is 8:21, so how about if we do another quick meditation? We'll do a body scan, and then I'll see if there's any more questions, and then I'll be here for a few minutes because I'll be cleaning up, so don't hesitate to ask me any questions. And then after we do the meditation, we're going to set our motivation, our dedication, and then we'll just tidy up a little bit with a few other announcements. So remember the 7-point posture of our legs, either feet flat on the floor if you're in the chair. If you can't get your feet flat on the floor, feel free to grab a pillow. If you're on the cushion, legs cross-legged in whatever position is comfortable. In our tradition, you never have the soles of your feet facing the altar or the holy object. So you can stretch out to the side, but usually we're sitting cross-legged. Your arms should be relaxed with your right hand in the palm of your left and your thumb slightly touching just below your navel, with your elbows just out a little bit away from your body to allow alertness and air circulation. Your jaws should be, your back should be straight. Let's do our backs first. Relaxed but straight. Your jaw and your mouth should be relaxed. Your lips lightly touching. Your teeth slightly apart. And then your tongue should be resting on the roof of your mouth, just lightly touching the back of your upper teeth. And that position is so that it prevents a lot of saliva so that you don't drool when you're in deep meditation and you don't have to swallow a lot. Again, the whole idea is to try to prevent any obscurations or barriers to meditating. Your eyes should be slightly closed or slightly open with your gaze downward and your head just slightly tilted forward. Chin down just a little. Just pretend like there's a string coming from the crown of your head and just pulling upward on that stack of coins or stack of blocks in our back. So I want you just to take a couple of breaths and focus your breathing at your nose or at your abdomen. And just watch your breath. And now focus your attention on the top of your head and move down slowly through your head, the skull, the back of your head, your ears, your face, releasing any tension in your brow or your eyes. Just totally relax your face muscles, your jaw. Wherever you're holding any clenching or tension, just notice it. Try to let it go. Just keep a normal, natural breath as you move down through your system. And each time you exhale, just relax a little bit more into this posture, letting go of any tension, any anxiety. Move down through your neck and shoulders. Often we hold a lot of tension here in these areas. Just check. Move down through your arms, elbows, hands and fingers, and let go of any tension you're holding there. And then slowly move down through your torso, releasing any tension from your back, your chest. Just breathe into these areas. As you breathe into the area, let the area relax. Let go of tension. Move to your waist, hips, buttocks. Release tension in your thighs, your knees. Just breathing into any discomfort you feel there. Just expand the space that is there. Release the tension in your legs, your ankles, your feet. Let go all the way through your toes. And just take a moment to focus on the lowermost part of your body that's coming into contact with your cushion or a chair. Feel the substance of your body as it makes that contact. Feel the weight and substance of this physical form where it's touching the earth. Note places where one body part is touching another and any discomfort you may feel. Just notice it. No need to fix anything. No judgments, no opinions. Just notice as you scan your body. See if you can bring a bit more relaxation, a bit more of breath into those places. Note your breathing, the movement of the abdomen or the chest as the air is moving in and moving out. Notice the curve of your arms, your shoulder, your body. Relax and take a deep breath. Release any lasting tension. Now dedicate this positive energy and insights to well-being and happiness for yourself and all living beings. You made the effort to come this evening just to start to learn a little bit more about Buddhism as you begin this journey. And now dedicate the fact that you came for your own benefit and the benefit of all sentient beings. So we'll talk more about dedication next week, but when you dedicate, think of it like a bookend. Your intentions, one bookend, dedication the other, and that you're cementing the deal. That when you dedicate, it's like you can have one drop of water that will evaporate, or you can put that drop of water, that drop of merit that we just created, into the ocean where it expands with all the other drops of the ocean. And that's just the way to look at dedication, is how can we expand and grow any positive merit that we've created here. So important to do that. Next week, we'll do a quick review, we'll practice more meditation, and then we're going to have a discussion on the Buddhist view of the mind and what is the mind, and we're going to talk about the Four Noble Truths in a little more detail. Remember that there's handouts online, and if any of you can't get them, I'm happy to print them off for you, so just let me know. I have my email up there if you want to write it down. Please do so. I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn, so if you don't do email but you want to do one of those, you can find me there, and I'd be happy to respond through that. We are all volunteers who teach here at the center. All of these are free. Come, take advantage of all of them. If you can give, do so. Nobody watches, nobody counts, nobody knows. We have Donna Box, you know, outside the store and as you walk in. And, you know, Donna is just at the act of giving or generosity that you give from your heart. And then we are also having an Inside Happiness series, and our next series is March 13th, just so you know that. We have information out there and beautiful posters. The two stories and pictures that are out there are actually center members, But we have different storyboards on people from throughout the community. We have dozens on how they've overcome some sort of adversity to find happiness in their everyday life. So they're lovely stories, and this series was started back in 2000. Well, started in 2008. Our first series was actually in 2009, and we're continuing to grow that program as a benefit to the community. So we have looking at happiness from different perspectives. Any questions or comments or thoughts before we leave? Well, I greatly appreciate the fact that you came out on a night like this. I really thought I was going to be here alone. It would not have surprised me at all. Thank you. Be very careful going home this evening. Think of when and how you can practice for 2 minutes a day, and just practice the breathing, counting your breaths and trying to just concentrate and focus on your breath. And then just see how, and set your intentions for the day. And just see how you feel. See how you feel. Think back at the end of the day how you feel. Dedicate anything that you, the one time you overcame anger or you weren't impatient with somebody, and see how that feels at the end of the day. And then we can talk a little bit about next week and explore any obstacles or any problems you're having to meditation. All right. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you.